That Damn Toad, Part 5. Samir sat on the plane with the stone toad tucked safely under the seat in front of him. It was challenging for him to leave, but he knew he would never find her. While he awaited takeoff, he replayed the events of the previous week in his head. He thought of how Harriet had told him that she had stolen a toad from Stam, who had stolen it from the neighbor he worked for. Samir didn't know how the neighbor had ended up with the stone, but he didn't think that Harriet did either. Samir recollected Harriet sharing that Sam had talked about licking the stone toad and how all his wishes had come true. Harriet had been hesitant to show Samir her journal, where her free-flow writing had included instructions and Samir's name over and over again. He remembered Harriet giving him a sample of what the stone toad could do. He also recalled Harriet admitting she hadn't wished for good things for the people that she didn't like, and she believed the wishes had happened. Samir's memory returned to the conversation with Harriet when she told him that they needed to pack because they had to go on a toad task and head to Barrow, Alaska. He listened, especially after seeing $1,000 materialize in his hand after Harriet made the wish for him. They had gone to Alaska as instructed, and they had taken a cab out to the point so the toad could be the Northern Lights. Samir grimaced as he recalled Harriet whistling and walking closer to the toad and the swirling clouds around it. In an instant, Harriet had been swept up into the swirling shades of greens and reds of the Northern Lights with that damn toad right next to her. Harriet had been whistling the whole time until he could no longer see or hear her. When the light show dissipated, the toad had been placed back atop the original snowbank, but Harriet was nowhere to be seen. Samir was grateful for how supportive and quickly people came to help and search for Harriet. Some even brought him food. Now here he was, over a week later, without Harriet and the toad in his possession. He was on his way back home, but to do what exactly? In this moment, Samir didn't know. Samir returned home to a slew of phone calls and unanswered texts from his time away in Alaska. He hadn't had the energy to face them while in Barrow, and he wasn't sure he had the energy to face them now. He defied the depression that enveloped him to complete daily tasks, many of which he did simply by rote. He even managed to go to work each day. Samir coped by talking with friends, each of them trying to work through the events of Harriet's disappearance. Samir was astonished that somehow he managed to function each day. He never once mentioned the toad to anyone, and he never had anyone over to his apartment. He was too afraid that he'd feel too comfortable in his own space and share all that he knew. Every evening, the stone toad silently greeted him from its place on Samir's living room table. It was over 1.5 feet tall and about 12 inches wide. Every evening, Samir would gently stroke the individual pitted marks that covered the toad's chiseled body. He wondered again who had taken the time to chisel the stone into the shape of a toad. On this particular night, he looked at its bulging eyes and whispered, "Who made you?" He did not receive an answer. The toad's chin stuck out, Samir thought, as if in defiance. Soon Samir had become accustomed to sitting in front of the toad after work each night and silently stroking its head, somehow feeling connected to Harriet when he did so. After about 1 month upon returning home, Samir again once found that toad in its usual spot. Only on this day, when Samir stroked its head, it purred. But that was wrong, he thought. Toads don't purr. But he couldn't think of any other word that fit. The vibration went through his hand, up his arm, and dispersed through his whole body. Samir breathed the question, "Who made you?" Samir's hand was drawn to the top of the toad, where his hand gently stopped. In that moment, Samir saw everything. He saw the elder who found the two rough stones, twins. He saw the man take them home and create identical toads from both, each having the identical chiseled marks. He saw bright colors of the souls that were fed to the twins during every solstice. He saw flashes in his mind of more people, more souls. He could almost feel the commotion of people providing gifts, raising the toads upon altars, the people adorning the twins with flowers and placing a variety of foods at their feet. Then there was drumming, the dancing, chanting, and the singing and continuous flow of dancing bodies. There were celebrations for days. The twin brothers were honored as harbingers of change, rebirth, and resurrection. Then Samir was plummeted into sudden darkness. Just as swiftly, he saw the twin brothers awaken and begin to molt. Samir's brain didn't argue that stones can't molt. He just watched in awe as the twins harmoniously yawned, their mouths gaping for hours before their shirking, hunching, relaxing, and again shirking, hunching, and relaxing, over and over until the outer layer was completely loose. Then they rested briefly as their skin split down their backs, falling in front of them. They both simultaneously took abrupt intakes of air, and then just as quickly, the continuous, large, pebbly pieces that once covered their bodies entered their mouths. And Samir understood that this annual event was how the brothers grew in size and in power. And each year, one of them would seek a living body to take it to the northern lights. Samir saw that while the toad was within those clouds, it would regain some of those lost souls that escaped and once again become one with its place in the universe. The twin brothers alternated years so the other could have fullness without fear of not getting enough and residing in hunger. The twins had fostered their very own modes of transformation and regeneration. Samir absorbed that because they were toads, they could traverse both the lower and upper realms of the spirit world. They were both good and evil, guiding and deceiving, granting and taking away, betraying or befriending. They could offer kindness and generosity or show cruelty and leave someone destitute. And they were immortal, perhaps even deities. Samir slowly sat forward and put his face close to the toad. He whispered, "How did you get here? I mean, I know how Harriet and Sam got you, but how did you get here in the first place?" He again touched the stone's head, expecting more visions. Instead, Samir felt swathed in the most serene, musical note he had ever heard. It encompassed him, drawing him inward to a place of warmth and calmness. Once he was captivated, it beckoned him nearer. He would do anything to get closer to that music and whatever and whomever it was generating it. Then in Samir's mind, he saw the old guy. The man had been driving and must have heard it too. He veered his car off the paved road and onto a barely marked dirt path. When he couldn't drive any longer, he exited his car and began walking. Samir saw him walking with purpose, like he knew exactly where he was going out in the middle of the desert. The musical note continued. Samir was unable to stop watching as the old man found the inconspicuous opening to the cave. The twins stood guard. Yes, Samir was certain of that. They were guarding the cave. The old man walked past both stone brothers and further into the cave. Samir half expected him to not return. But the man did return and went directly to one of the twins, picked him up, and carried him out of the cave. The music abruptly ended, and Samir understood that that was the origination of the toad's journey to being in Samir's custody. Samir understood that part of the twins' history and was quite certain he hadn't been shown all of it. He comprehended that he was now a part of the journey, whether he understood why or not, and whether he wanted that delegation or not. Samir exited the reverie once again, knowing what needed to be done. He stroked the toad's head, nodded, and got up and went to his computer. He had some research to do and some tickets to purchase. He also wanted a map, although intrinsically knowing he'd never use it. A matter of security, he told himself. He didn't have any problems requesting off work. It was a slow construction season, and his boss actually seemed relieved to give him time off. One less person he needed to try to find work for, Samir supposed. Samir spent the next week preparing his apartment for his leave of absence. He cleaned out his refrigerator, scrubbed the kitchen and bathroom, and made sure any clothes that weren't packed were clean and put away. He wasn't sure what his state of mind would be upon returning home, but he was certain he wouldn't want to deal with the menial tasks of cleaning and laundry. He solicited the help of some friends to check on his apartment and vehicle periodically, explaining that he was going on vacation in Mexico and wasn't sure when he was expected to return. He downloaded a couple of language apps since his Spanish-speaking abilities were less than ideal from his classes in college, which now felt like eons ago. Finally, what Samir began thinking of as the day of reckoning came. Samir printed out his bus ticket, packed the few remaining daily necessities into his duffel, and put the stone toad into the backpack. He was ready. He locked up his apartment and went outside to his waiting Uber. A few minutes later, he was at the bus station and feeling more than a bit nervous. As he waited, the musical note he had experienced during the history that the toad had shared began playing in his head, softly bringing his mind to a calm state, his body relaxing with the soothing tone. In that moment, he felt he was where the universe needed him to be, and everything was going to be okay. Samir stepped onto the bus and headed to the back seats. He took a seat, removed the toad from the backpack, and placed it on its lap. As the bus idled before beginning its journey south, Samir sat tranquilly. Once it started moving, Samir leaned back in his seat and smiled. He watched out the window from the back of the bus as he absentmindedly stroked the toad's head. He was on his way to Mexico, to the Chihuahuan Desert to be exact. He knew there he would be directed to a specific cave. He had done his research, and he knew that caves also represented entry in and out of the two worlds, one above and one below. Samir didn't know precisely where in the desert he was being led. The toad would let him know when he got closer. But before that, the damn toad had some unfinished business. There were a few things that it needed completed before it was reunited with its twin brother. The toad had shown Samir the tasks that were to be completed, indicating that Samir was instrumental in all of them. He had been chosen for a reason. The toad knew his weakness. Samir settled into his seat. He needed to get some rest. He was going to be on a very long journey filled with mayhem. Finn.